Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
See you driving around town with the girl I love, and I'll lie, forget you.
This is the version of the song that we can play on the radio. But after today's Supreme Court case is decided, you might hear the original version. It uses a very different F word. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, the High Court looks at what you can and can't say or sing on the airwaves. Plus new music from a cellist and two sibling duos in our weekly Pick 3. And we've got live world music from banjo player Jamie Stone and his band. But first, the Supreme Court heard arguments this morning in a case that's been batted around the legal system for years. The FCC versus Fox Television Stations. The case began when the FCC sanctioned Fox for profanities that were uttered in passing during the Billboard Music Awards almost a decade ago. Over the years, FCC versus Fox Television Stations has ballooned into a case with far-reaching potential. Its outcome could affect us here at WNYC, along with every other broadcast radio and TV outlet in the States. Joining me here in the studio to explain is New York Times media reporter Brian Stelter. Brian, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
So this is going to be a grown-up discussion. You will hear some bleeping during the next 20 minutes. We're talking about indecency at the heart of the matter here, which is famously a very difficult thing to define. Is that part and parcel of what's happening in front of the Supreme Court today?
And because it's so hard to define, we go to the courts. This is the debate that's happening today and has been happening for the last 9 years, and then stretching back even further in different cases in the past. But today the Supreme Court is hearing a case about whether Fox was legally okay with what it broadcast 9 years ago during an award show, and then again later when we've had a couple similar cases on other networks. They all sort of wrap up into this one case that's before the Supreme Court. And Fox is arguing that the current regulations from the FCC are unconstitutionally vague, that it's just not clear what is okay and what's not okay, and that it needs to be much more clear if they're going to enforce these kinds of rules.
So it's not just First Amendment, the right to free speech. It's also Fifth Amendment, the right to due process, know what the law is. There, Fox is claiming, and there's a lot of broadcasters lined up behind them, that the law is that the statute is too vague.
Too vague. The broadcast trade group in Washington says we'll follow the rules if we know what the rules are. And in fact, in this case, one of these cases here that's tied up in the hearing today involves the singer Cher using a curse word on the air. Fox was not fined for doing that, even though Fox could have been fined for airing it, but Fox was warned not to do it again. It's that sort of vagueness that the Fox is objecting to.
All right. Here is Fox's attorney, Carter Phillips, arguing in front of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. I mentioned this has been like a legal ping pong going back and forth between the Supreme Court and this Second Circuit Court of Appeals. This is going back to 2006, and Fox attorney Carter Phillips explains why the FCC sanctioned Fox in the first place.
In 2002, the renowned actress and singer Cher responded to her critics in a television show by saying, and in 2003, Nicole Richie, who is an actress, commented on her own television show, which is entitled The Simple Life, by saying that it was hardly all that simple, because does anybody know how hard it is to get cow out of a Prada purse?
And, did Fox plan those statements?
No, there's no dispute that Fox did not plan them. The only assessment by the FCC is that Fox was arguably negligent and failing adequately to respond to the possibility that those statements might be offered.
All right, so that's Fox attorney Carter Phillips in front of Judge Rosemary Pooler in that clip from 2006. Again, the Supreme Court is hearing the case today. And, I mean, Brian, we're talking about the vagueness of the law here. This is from the FCC website describing indecency. Mm-hmm. Language or material that, in context, depicts or describes in terms patently offensive as measured by contemporary community standards for the broadcast medium, sexual or excretory organs or activities. There's a lot of wiggle room there, isn't there? I mean, first of all, the phrase in context.
Right.
And then patently offensive as measured by contemporary community standards.
Community standards.
Community standards will vary somewhat.
And, of course, we're talking about local television stations and local radio stations. There may be different standards in different communities.
So what will the court be looking to determine, do you think?
They're determining whether Fox is correct in saying that this is unconstitutionally vague, and if so, what to do about it. And this could result in the rules being significantly looser for these networks. That could mean that we see more vulgarities or more risque programming on network television than we do today. Of course, the
So that CeeLo song that we were hearing, which, you know, if you remember the Grammys,
yes.
tortured language they used to describe the song also known as Forget You.
That's right.
If
he would be able, perhaps, to perform the original version. That said, the networks also have to be careful not to offend their audience. And many would say you don't need any rules from the government to know whether to do that or not.
Right.
It's really about what role we want the government to play in deciding what can be expressed and what cannot be expressed on the airwaves. And, of course, we should note here, cable is excluded from these rules entirely. The Internet's excluded from these rules entirely. And the other argument against these rules is that these are just completely outdated at this point.
Well, the idea that some broadcasters are held to a different standard, some TV stations, channels, are held to a different standard than others
because
some are broadcast and some are cable, that is a very thorny issue that I want to come back to. But we're speaking with Brian Stelter, media reporter for the New York Times here in the studio. John Egerton is on the line with us. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for Broadcasting and Cable, and he has been at the Supreme Court this morning. He's reporting on the arguments that were made in the case. John, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, guys.
So what update us. What happened this morning? Were there major arguments put forth on each side?
Well, yeah, basically the government came out, Solicitor General Al Varelli came out and basically said that broadcasters were sitting on billions of dollars worth of spectrum, and that one of the quid pro quos for doing that was to, you know, be subject to reasonable indecency regulations. And the industry basically came back and said, well, but these are unreasonable indecency regulations that give us no sense of where to go. There appeared to be, I would say, from the justices, you know, an unease with sweeping away all indecency regulations. There was a lot of talk about, you know, particularly Scalia, you know, was saying, well, what isn't a safe harbor? Sort of isn't that a modicum of decency, and isn't that a reasonable exchange for, you know, having a broadcast license?
Okay. Can you just describe safe harbor for folks who are not in the broadcast industry?
Broadcasters are perfectly free to put on decent content between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Safe harbor is when, you know, the FCC between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. says broadcasters can't put on decent content because children are most likely to be in the audience.
Right. So how big, do you get a sense how big on free speech the court is these days under the Chief Justice, John Roberts?
Well, I mean, there were definitely, you know, I talked to one person after the argument is on the other side, on the broadcaster side, saying that they thought that perhaps, you know, the social conservatism of both Alito and Roberts trumped the First Amendment. But there was, I mean, certainly on from most of the justices, there were at least, you know, questions about, you know, what kind of a standard is it that Catch-22's 40 seconds of nudity, including full frontal nudity, was okay with the FCC, but 7 seconds worth of Charlotte Ross's behind was not. And is that a standard that you can actually, you know, make decisions based on?
Right. Any surprises this morning, or were you basically hearing what you expected to hear?
I would say I basically heard what I expected to hear. It kind of surprised me for a minute when the Fox lawyer said that they would be okay with keeping the indecency regs for radio and not for TV. But that was, you know, because he's arguing for television stations, and he's trying to make the point that, you know, TV faces, you know, cable right next to it, and, you know, the Internet is basically going to be side by side. And in that sense, that it's, you know, obviously not, you know,
throw radio under the bus.
Sounds sort of selfish to me.
That's what I thought immediately. But, I mean, he was a lawyer representing his client, and that was the argument he needed to make.
All right. John Egerton's been reporting from Washington. He was at the Supreme Court hearing this morning. He's Washington Bureau Chief for Broadcasting and Cable. John, thanks very much for calling in.
Thanks, guys.
Once again, Brian Stelter, media reporter for The New York Times, here with me in the studio. There's just so much to this case. The idea of the safe harbor, You know, parents want to know that they can turn the TV on between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m.
Right.
and not have to worry about the language their kids are going to hear. I think anyone who is or has been or wants to be a parent can understand that. But there isn't a similar rule for violence.
I was about to say that that is the, in some ways, more interesting part, that we don't worry, at least the government doesn't worry in a legal way, about the numbers of murders and homicides and sexual assaults that are portrayed on television between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. every day.
And yet, someone in passing who is really excited about something and says it's effing brilliant,
right,
that can cost you your license, in theory.
That's right. And there are some similarities to that in media and culture in the last 30 to 40 years, that violence is not treated the same way that profanity is. It's a funny thing about our culture, but it clearly, if you look at television these days, if you watch at 9 p.m., it's very visible how different these standards are.
All right. Soundcheck listeners, what do you think? If the ruling comes down that allows, and we're not saying this is going to happen, but this is certainly a possibility, if it allows swearing on broadcast TV and on radio, how would you feel about that? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or leave a comment on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. What do you think about this? It's a thorny issue, and there are things to be said on both sides. Certainly, the fact that these rules are in effect has not stopped things like this from happening. This is Bono from the band U2 accepting a Golden Globe Award for Best Original Song from the film Gangs of New York in 2003.
That's really, really brilliant. And really, really great.
Short but sweet.
Cream of the crop of television right there. Just like The Simple Life.
That was on NBC. And, the FCC, by all accounts, did not want to crack down on the networks, you know, for these fleeting expletives, as they're called, but were pressed by Congress and by the Parents Television Council into it.
That's right. It's worth looking at this in the historical context, which is that the FCC historically has not spent too much time worrying about these sorts of things until the early part of the last decade, when the Bush administration came into power and when the Bush administration appointed Republicans to the FCC, in particular one Republican, Kevin Martin, who made this one of his top issues. Kevin Martin pressed for the networks to be held accountable in this way because, he said, they are using the public airwaves. They're using space that the public owns over the air. But these pressure groups are really important in this story because, in particular, the Parents Television Council, which is relatively small but has a lot of weight behind it from mostly conservative parents across the country, is able to send out mass letters and now mass emails and now tweets and get people outraged about something, even if they didn't actually hear it to begin with. They'll be outraged after the fact, and they will be able to send hundreds of thousands of letters to the FCC demanding action to be taken.
So there was this kind of spate of events happening 2001, 2, 3, and 4.
We had the infamous Janet Jackson fleeting
the wardrobe
indecency.
Malfunction, yes.
Yes, we had a series of these instances that were able to be seized upon.
Many on music award shows.
That's right.
2 years of the Billboard Music Awards, Bono at the Golden Globes. What was it with musicians and swearing in the early noughts?
That's stressful time, maybe, with iTunes coming in, right? With the music industry collapsing, perhaps. I can actually think off the top of my head of a few times on news programs where there were fleeting expletives that were not sanctioned, that were not punished by the government. But they were targeting these primetime entertainment shows.
And sports is another thing. You know, anytime it's live,
right,
you know, how much does the network, the TV station that is running the baseball game, how much responsibility do they bear if their audience mics, their crowd mics, happen to catch some drunken lout too close to the microphone swearing in an audible way?
Right. I mean, or a streaker, for that matter.
How do you stop that?
You know, the networks take it pretty seriously, from my sense. From being in control rooms, they've got this button usually, this 7-second delay. They can press it any time. They're actually pretty good at it. They catch most of these things most of the time. But it's inevitable that some is going to slip through. That's one of the consequences of having live television.
Right. All right, let's see what some of our soundcheck listeners have to say. Mimi is joining us from the Bronx. Mimi, what's your feeling about this issue?
I think this is a long-standing, difficult issue. Personally, as far as I'm concerned, it's just words, and I think as a parent, it's important to teach our children these words. I'm much more upset about what you were mentioning, violence and sexual abuse against people. I think that's a much more egregious and horrifying thing for anybody to see, much less children. And, I mean, I think we should, these words are heard everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just words. I mean, words are important. I think language is very important. At the same time, I think running away from words is just closing down doors.
Well, Mimi, you remind me of, you know, one of the first of the big celebrated cases in this field, and that, of course, was George Carlin's monologue, you know, the seven words that you can't say on television.
That's
the
right.
Seven dirty words. And I remember there are several versions of this, but I remember at least one version where George Carlin is saying, what dirty words? There are no dirty words. Dirty thoughts, dirty intentions, but no dirty words.
This case eventually went to the FCC. It was George Carlin that in part sparked it. And that is what triggered the FCC to have some of these abilities they have today to regulate these issues.
And they do have that ability because, as has been mentioned already, I think John Egerton mentioned this when he called in from Washington, D.C., the Solicitor General today in front of the Supreme Court saying, look, these people are sitting on billion-dollar industries. We, the public, own those airwaves, and the people who have the license to operate a radio or a television station have a duty and an obligation. It's written right into the contract to do so in the public interest.
The same theory that says that they should be broadcasting newscasts, providing children's programming, that they have a responsibility to the community. Of course, I don't think at this day and in this day and age that most people come to recognize that, because most people have a television set with several hundred channels on it. And I find that many young adults and many younger people don't recognize the difference between broadcast and cable at all.
Right.
It's really vanishing. And in the same way that Howard Stern decided to leave broadcast over-the-air radio, went to satellite radio, which is unregulated, because he wanted to be able to curse more and be more explicit. People don't recognize the differences anymore between the over-the-air wave stations and the cable.
Well, now this has really complicated the Supreme Court's job. I mean, it was one thing when you just had your major networks and a bunch of local TV and radio stations to deal with. You make your law. You hope it's not too vague. It passes both First and Fifth Amendment, you know, sort of bearings or standards. But then to do that and then have this whole other group of channels, many of them owned by the same major networks, and they're free from all of those regulations.
That's right.
You know, from a legal standpoint, how does anybody justify that double standard?
It's a key point of what these companies are arguing before the Supreme Court. I noticed today, in fact, in an unrelated note, the head of ABC was out in Los Angeles talking to reporters, talking about a new show. They have two new shows this spring that were going to include the word bitch in the title. They've taken the word out. They've abbreviated it. They've found ways around it because the network president said, we just don't think that word's appropriate in the title on a network TV show.
Mm.
If he was on cable, as he used to work on cable, the name would still be in the title. So there is a responsibility the networks feel. They do try to take that responsibility seriously in some way.
Well, they have to because
they're also up against market pressures, though, and people are going to cable. People are going to those risque shows on cable.
And, you know, at some point, though, you do want to avoid sort of, you know, pushing your audience away. I mean, that, of course, is anathema to any broadcaster.
Right.
You walk a fine line. If you're too straight and narrow, you're seen as old and boring. And if you're too edgy, you know, you're losing the parents and their kids. And that's, you know, perhaps a big part of your demographic.
That's
so,
right.
As I say, a very thorny issue.
I do think in some ways the Internet solves some of these problems. Children these days aren't going to be plopped in front of the TV so much as they're going to be plopped in front of the iPad.
But that's completely unregulated.
That's right. But you are able to make more choices. You're able to select on-demand content that you probably know is appropriate as opposed to a channel and you're not sure what's going to be on the channel that hour. In some ways, choosing and having more choice will solve some of these thorny issues.
Let's go back to the phone, see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have to say. Again, we're talking about the current case before the Supreme Court that could possibly allow primetime profanity, you know, songs that don't have to be bleeped. You just hear them unexpurgated, no more clean versions. Linda, Staten Island, what do you think?
I'm thinking that it's a real loss to the listeners and to the viewers of TV to be to be almost competing with, I would say, kind of like soft internet porn on TV, and that we're losing like good writing. And as I said before, it's like these writers have gone to the Richard Pryor School of Writing. It's very much the same from channel to channel, and I feel that it's like just pandering to the lowest of human interest.
It's Linda, it sounds like what you're saying is it comes down to very much a matter of taste, because of course there are lots of people who would say the Richard Pryor School of Writing was a damn good school. And came up with
matter of choice.
Exactly, a matter of taste. It's if it's not your taste, you're going to feel that way. Corey is on the line with us from right here in Manhattan. I'm told, Corey, that you're a lawyer. How do you look at matters of taste like this?
I think the problem is that the court is lost in the weeds. At the last argument, Chief Justice Roberts said, "Well, you know, the F word is much more graphic," which is not even true. I mean, it's just a question. You can use the synonyms on TV and on national public radio as much as you want.
Right.
You can use the synonyms in court papers as much as you want. It's just that these old Anglo-Saxon words, and they are old Anglo-Saxon words, are somehow considered to be more tasteless than the current, you know, Anglo-French versions that we use as synonyms. But it just boils down to taste, because you can't. It's one thing if they wanted to say you cannot talk about the subject of these words in any way on TV. Now, I don't think you could actually run a TV network that way, but you could do that, and then it would make some sense because it wasn't a question of which word. But we're only talking about synonyms here, and the court's completely lost in the weeds because they can't figure out which of these synonyms should be okay and which one shouldn't. And it just, as you were saying, it just comes down to taste. Some people find these words distasteful, even though they find the synonyms perfectly fine.
Right. It's, you know, how do you legislate taste is ultimately what we're talking about.
In the meantime, it's a pretty creative time for those folks in Hollywood who have to come up with clever ways to say alternatives. I have to say, I love when shows like Fox's Family Guy have to bend over backwards to make clear what they're referring to without actually saying it.
Brian Stelter is media reporter for The New York Times. He's been with us in the studio here. We had a brief call-in from John Egerton from Washington, and the Bureau Chief for Broadcasting and Cable, who was at the Supreme Court hearing this morning. Obviously a story that will continue to unfold as it has for what, John, for Brian? It's been like
nine
a decade.
9 years now. 9 years.
So we'll look for an ending at some point, but maybe we won't hold our breath. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck.
Check out the sales charts. My record's kicking. I'm breaking PD's heart. They ban me from the shows because they say I'm too hard. But no sellout. I guess I'm just barred. I ain't changing mine for nobody.